few would be interested more in such questions of tumbling. How was the tumbling mode and how did it build up and so forth? We have a man here who knows much about this and wrote a few scientific papers about this tumbling. Particularly, that is Dr. Naumann, Bob Naumann.
Mm-hmm. All right, thank you.
He was a member of this team here, of this Pegasus team.
All right, now you had a question about Houston?
I just wonder what if Houston participated
again,
in this.
Excuse me, if you'd like to know more about other experiments like the paint experiments and albedo measurements and so on, Mr. Heller would be the right man to talk to.
All right, thank you.
H-E-L-L-E-R, Gerhard.
Gerhard,
Heller.
Yeah.
They are both in SSL.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Now you had a question of Houston's participation. Mm-hmm.
Did you, since they were concerned with the spacecraft,
we were in close contact with their meteorite group, and that group at that time was, or the man with whom we conversed mostly, was Mr. Courpalais, that is C-O-U-R-T, I believe, hyphen P-A-L-A-I-S, French name.
Mm-hmm.
Courpalais, one L in Palais. He was Houston's meteorite man, and he and we here conversed very often and exchanged ideas and thoughts, and we sure had a good contact with him and his group. We also had contact with their people who were responsible for thermal designs, because we obtained thermal design information through our paints and thermal sensors. That would be again Gerhard Heller, who would know more about it.
Mm-hmm. The Allodyne.
Yeah, right. Now, a man who could tell you more about the contacts with Houston would be Dr. Dozier. He is also at Marshall, D-O-Z-E-R,
mm-hmm.
Jim Dozier.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any more? Yeah.
If you like to exchange some views with headquarters people who were in this project, the man to talk to would be Warren Keller. It was Warren Keller, K-E-L-L-E-R. He is at the present time in OSSA, Office of Space Sciences and Application, and he is the man behind the Grand Tour in OSSA.
Mm-hmm.
Warren Keller, he was deeply involved in our Pegasus project, and he could possibly give you some information.
I wonder if you could tell us something about the development of the Space Sciences Lab and things of that type here. Is that, you began kind of more using contractors, is that right? And then developed a much larger in-house capability.
We always put emphasis on in-house capability, and in fact it has always been the laboratory which put most emphasis on in-house capability. We tried to strengthen and back up our scientific work by contractors and by contracts in many fields, and we had a number of contracts. But it was always a very important point for us to develop honest-to-goodness scientists,
mm-hmm.
here in our own grounds within the Marshall Center. And that was in SSL, in Space
mm-hmm.
Sciences Laboratory. Through the years, we developed capability and activity and research activities in a number of fields, among them thermal physics, which includes thermal design problems and radiation properties of matter and all kinds of aspects of thermal control systems. In that activity and our laboratories, we went really deep into the properties of matter with respect to heat emission and heat absorption and heat conduction. A number of very good papers were written by members of the laboratory in these areas, heat conduction, heat emission, heat absorption, and properties of surfaces of different kinds.
Mm-hmm.
Another one was radiation physics, and here we went in two directions. First, we developed theories and computer codes and capabilities in estimating radiation effects of radiation sources on board of spacecraft. And these radiation sources would be radioisotopes and nuclear reactors. Mm-hmm. Nuclear reactors as planned for NERVA, mm-hmm. and also for space power sources, mm-hmm. reactors, thermionic space power sources. Then we developed in the same group, we developed knowledge and data on the natural radiation space environment. This environment includes the Van Allen belts, cosmic rays, solar flare radiation, and artificial radiation like starfish. Mm-hmm. SSL was quite active in developing these capabilities. Then the third capability in the radiation area was the development of sensors. One sensor was the one in Pegasus, which was developed by a company, TRW, Thomson Reimer Woodridge, but with our close cooperation. And then another...
Excuse me, that was a radiation sensor?
Well, the electron sensor.
The electron sensor.
Mm-hmm. For Van Allen electrons. Mm-hmm. Subsequent to that, we began a number of years ago to develop a proton sensor. And this experiment has come to fruition very nicely. This proton sensor is now a firm piece of equipment for Skylab. It's a proton sensor which senses the environment of protons, rather the environment with respect to protons, and it measures not only the total radiation doses, but it measures the energy distribution of the proton radiation, which is very important if the effects are to be judged upon men. Mm-hmm. This radiation energy distribution meter has been developed in SSL and to some extent together with the University of Huntsville UAH.
Hmm. Now, do you have another area you wanted to add to that?
These are two areas of SSL. Now there are a few more. Mm-hmm. One is infrared astronomy, mm-hmm. and infrared physics, very active area. Mm-hmm. Another area is meteoroid physics on a broad basis. Pegasus was just one part of it. Hmm. But in this meteoroid physics activity, we developed sensors from the ground, optical sensors to just look at the streaks of meteors with very high sensitivity. This sensor has been used from the ground and also from high-flying airplanes. Mm-hmm. Then. One activity which we cultivated through a number of years, but which had to be reduced then because the assignment was given to other center, was electric propulsion. The development of electric propulsion was a strong activity of SL for a number of years.
That was one of your special interests.
This is right, yeah. That's correct. This activity was then transferred to the Lewis Research Center, and from that time on we had to go down to a low level of activity. Mm-hmm. Then another area was the planning for scientific satellites. And this was done at a time when not much planning for scientific satellites was done by other groups and other places. For example, the planning for the HEO satellite began, you know what the HEO is, High Energy Astronomical mm-hmm. Observatory, that began around 75, 76 in SSL on a slow basis, and it came up into a project level only more recently, about 2 or 3 years ago, but mm-hmm. much groundwork, much study work was done at SSL and with SSL contractors. From about 64, 65 on.
Mm-hmm. Is there one that stands out in your mind that was and I apologize for being parochial, since that's what we're supposed to be doing, the Saturn vehicles, mm-hmm. among other mm-hmm. things. Was there one scientific project that had a specific influence on design changes or confirmation of the booster vehicles for the Saturn?
I would say this one, the Pegasus, and then thermal investigations, which were made on Pegasus and on other spacecraft too. In fact, we began these measurements on Explorer 7. That was in 1961. Do you remember that, Explorer 7?
No. There's so many explorers, mm-hmm. I can't remember which one now.
Mr. Heller would be the right source of information here, mm-hmm. Gerhard Heller.
And here we're talking about thermal coatings, basically.
Thermal coatings and the question of what temperature a certain sensor, temperature sensor, assumes under given orbital conditions and coated with a certain mm-hmm. coating, special mm-hmm. coating.
Mm-hmm. When you went on your polar trip with Dr. Von Braun, did you come up with any insights that had an influence on the Saturn Apollo program?
I wonder whether you have seen the trip report which we wrote.
No, I haven't.
That. And your question is answered partially in this report.
I've just seen a picture of you standing in the snow.
Yeah, I see that.
that's about the size of my information there.
Yeah, I could not honestly claim that this particular experience influenced the set of the science. But I would suggest that you take a copy of that paper from my secretary, and there is a whole chapter in it, a couple of pages, in answer to that question.
Mm-hmm.
We cannot not directly say that one particular finding in Antarctica changed Saturn from one form into another form. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, what we learned and the whole experience down there was certainly did influence all of us. That was Van Braun and Gilruth and Max Verschey and I. We were there together, and in a broad sense, we learned a number of things down there on how to handle scientific investigations in remote places when they are cut off the home base and cut off the laboratory, and when people cannot move and work as freely as they can here in the normal environment.
Mm-hmm.
And this was quite helpful to us to see how they do it in Antarctica, how they handle this logistics problem from the mainland into a remote place.
Mm-hmm. Over the years, there have been criticisms that have been stilled, I guess, a little bit by Apollo 15 mm-hmm. on the lack of science in the Saturn and NASA programs. Can you make some comments?
In previous ones or future ones?
In previous ones, I'm talking, it's been mm-hmm. stilled lately, I'm suggesting by 15, but can you make some comments about the growth of the scientific effort within NASA during the last 10 years?
I would look at it about in the following way. This is 1960, and that is 1970. Now, we began with this Earth orbiting flights in 58 and the Russians in 57.
Mm-hmm.
On our very first flight, the Van Allen Bell was discovered. You know, that was a very good and mm-hmm. fine accomplishment. And then after that, there were a number of more explorers, and they did a lot of exploring, which is not too well known to the public. But if you look into books on this subject, you're surprised to see how much has been found and discovered around this early program. This is a book on space sciences, and here one on space physics, and here scientific satellites. And it's very amazing to see how much for the physicist was found out of these early flights, mm-hmm. explorer flights. This here, for example, our magnetosphere mm-hmm. around the sun. Solar wind, for example. So mm-hmm. there is a very rich harvest which came out of these early flights, even though the normal non-scientific citizen does not catch it so readily, because you know it's fine science and science in areas which are normally not too close to the average citizen. For example, the fact that there is a solar wind, but it does not reach the Earth because it's absorbed and deviated by the Earth's magnetic field, is extremely important for science.
Mm-hmm.
But you cannot drive a car with it, or a motorboat, or feed a family out of the solar wind immediately. So many people here are not too close to it with their interest, but for science it's very important.
Mm-hmm.
And science as a whole, of course, is extremely important to mankind, in my opinion at least.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly to the highly civilized countries, it's extremely important because science is the reservoir out of which we feed our progress and oftentimes our existence and our survival, I would say. So even if the solar wind does not yet feed Mr. Taxpayer directly, I think it's one of the outstanding discoveries and findings, one of many
mm-hmm.
in science, which will certainly have their influence on our way of life and our civilization in the years to come. Well, in a way, mm-hmm. there was a lot of science developing here, but then around that time, there was the decision to go to the moon. And that is when Apollo was born, with a deadline around here. And this was a tall order, of course, a very tall order to fly men to the moon and bring them back. So NASA had to put emphasis on Apollo during this decade. And the objective of this was to fly men to the moon and bring them back alive. So this was the overruling and guiding thought in all of our work. But in addition to that, there was still a lot of good science going on. There were the Mariners, you know, going to Mars. Mm-hmm. There were a number of very good unmanned lunar flights, the Lunar Orbiter and Ranger and Surveyor, which brought back a whole lot of good science in addition to design figures for Apollo. And there was very good astronomy, OSO, Orbiting Solar Observatory, and then the OAO, the first real good one was launched in December 68,
mm-hmm.
but it was developed during that time. So there was quite a bit of good science going on here. Now it was the understanding and the feeling and knowledge of, I think, everybody in the space program that this decade here will be mainly the decade of science.
The 70s.
Mm-hmm. This would be the decade of Apollo. In that decade we would prove that we can do it. We would fulfill the president's promise and desire. We would develop all that those capabilities. And from here on we would really utilize what we have done and accomplished and learned and developed in this decade.
Mm-hmm.
And so this decade was always in our plans, in our feeling, the decade of astronomy, of physics, of space biology, and of Earth sciences seen from space, geophysics and Earth observations and other sciences that can be done from orbit and that concern our Earth. I should include here planetary and also more lunar exploration. This was the broad program for the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
Now around that time one realized more and more that in order to do this we should have a cheaper launch capability than by expendable rockets.
Okay, about 68 you're talking about here.
Okay. It's mm-hmm. not a firm point, but around that time.
All right.
We had the feeling that we do need a cheaper and more convenient launch capability than Saturns,
mm-hmm.
which are expensive and are used only once, and it takes so long, you know, to put one together and fit everything in, and then it's launched and it's gone. So around that time, the idea came up that we should have a reusable vehicle, and that is how the shuttle idea was born. Most outspoken protagonist for that was Dr. Müller and his OMSF group. And so around that time, the plan for the shuttle was born, but with the idea that all of these things should be done with a shuttle, but we can do it with a shuttle in a cheaper and better way than if we had to take Saturns for it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, again, our thoughts around that time were that we could do both, develop the shuttle and at the same time go into these sciences in a broad and very efficient and fast-moving way. As long as we had no shuttle yet to fly with, we would fly with more Saturns, with Titans, with Atlases, and we would develop these sciences as much as we could, including more lunar flights, including planetary flights, including large satellites to observe the Earth from up there, including large satellites to do space biology, and including flying telescopes and flying spark chambers and cosmic ray counters and so on. Mm-hmm. Now with this very low budget, we believe it's very low. Some people say $3 billion is still a hell of a lot of money. We believe it's very low. With this very low budget, we are in a bad squeeze now. We would like to go on with this year, and we would like to go on with the shuttle. Mm-hmm. We believe that we are in very good swing with all of these experiments and projects here. We have done much in this program, which encourages us to do more. And we have some very good projects, as you may know, the LST in astronomy, large space telescope, 3-meter telescope. In earth sciences, we have some very good plans for earth observations with cameras and infrared sensors and other sensing equipment. We have some very fine plans for planetary observation, the Grand Tour, Viking, and then a number of flights to individual planets with land orbiters and landings and sample returns. We have some very good plans for more lunar exploration, but altogether this would be a $6 billion program, and we have about one half of it. Each of them would cost about $3 billion. And now we have $3 billion, and that gives us a problem. to go on with a shuttle on a very small basis does not make much sense, because you would move so slowly that it would be always obsolete. Mm-hmm. Whatever you build, you will never get it, because you would not catch up, so to speak. And to move with a small amount here would just not give us the fine and broad program which we could do now on the basis of what we have learned during that time. Some people say that our program is unbalanced. Now we put everything into the shuttle and have not much left for science. That is one of the criticisms which is heard many times. And this is not incorrect, but we wanted it differently. We wanted a balanced program between the shuttle and the science, and that would have been about a $6 billion program. Mm-hmm. Now, since we have less than that, we are in a very, very difficult situation. Should we take the $3 billion only for the shuttle and do nothing up there, that would certainly be wrong. Mm-hmm. And most people would advise violently against this. Should we forget about the shuttle and do only some small flying here, we would again advise against it. We have no more Saturns, as you know. We have a few left, but then that's it. And we cannot say, well, we will go on with the Saturns and do all of this with Saturns. We don't have them. Production has been discontinued. And so we would not be able to move as we had thought of moving around this time here. We do need a shuttle now to go on with this, but in order to build a shuttle and have the shuttle in a few years, we have to spend a certain amount of money. Mm-hmm. And we cannot afford either to drop this effort, because if we put everything into the shuttle, we may have the shuttle in 1980, but nothing to fly with, to fly on the shuttle. Mm-hmm. And this is a very bad situation now, a very difficult one.
And all you can do is hope for better support in the future, then.
That's what we hope, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's what we hope, and some support to make both these projects possible and feasible. They need each other. Mm-hmm. The shuttle needs science to justify its existence. It's not only pure science, as you see here. Earth sciences will directly lead to a better Earth, to better utilization of our resources, and keeping the Earth cleaner than we do it right now.
Well, John, we asked for an hour and you've given us an hour.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it certainly does. And I'd like to...
that would be really helpful.
Three books on space physics and other titles. One is Wilmot Hess, H-E-S-S, editor, Introduction to Space Science by Goddard Space Flight Center and NASA. The second book, Donald P. LaGalle, editor, L-E, capital G-A-L, capital G, and Alan Rosen, entitled Space Physics. The third book, William R. Corliss, C-O-R-L-I-S-S, Scientific Satellites, a NASA publication. And a fourth book that Dr. Stuhlinger just put down, Robert J. McIntyre, Jr., M-A-C-K-I-N, Marcia Neuer, N-E-U-G-E-B-A-U-R, editors, The Solar Wind by Pergamon Press. The book on space physics is published by John Wiley and Son. The Solar Wind. Published